Mr. and Mrs. Autism and all the ships at sea. You're listening to STEM for STEM, the relationship podcast by and for autistic people. I'm one of your co-hosts, Zach Budrick. Who else is here with me tonight?
Hi, Charlie Stern, Paris Geller Stern, and Mr. Bird. And you might hear some bonus voices.
That's right. We are doing a check-in episode that's just the two of us. We know that just about everybody has been going through it with a capital T and a capital G in the meantime. So, you know, this is essentially an episode for us all to check in with one another as co-hosts and as a community and talk about some, you know, answer a couple questions that we've got that sort of like specifically pertain to these issues that might be more acutely felt with things looking as, you know, somewhat dire as they do.
Yeah, so I have two new ladies in my life. Zach also has a new lady in his life. So Zach, do you want to talk about this little lady?
Sure, we have a Chihuahua puppy named Ziggy. She is somewhere around here. I should have eyes on her, but she slept all day and now she is back to exploring. And, you know, she's very small, but very fierce, to paraphrase Shakespeare. And she is, you know, we are madly in love with her and she knows it. And she thinks that our big senior cats want to be her friends, even though they don't. And she is just going to keep at that and, you know, square up with them every time they make eye contact with her and play bow to them and bork at them and whatever it takes.
I admire how dedicated she is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I keep looking over my shoulder because so we have two new foster birds and they are two girl parakeets and one is the mom and one is the daughter, and one's name is Stevie and one is named Nikki, but it's not really important and no one at the rescue can even tell them apart. So I just refer to them as the girls. And Paris and the girls have such a weird relationship and I'm just like, okay, Paris is in the girl's cage, which is like,
oh, come
so
on,
small.
Paris.
Like it's, you know, a cage for parakeets and not a cage for something a lot bigger, like Paris, with a big long tail. Okay, well, he's gonna get got because he, like, he tries to like peck and hiss at the girls, but then he'll go into their cage and he'll get himself cornered by them, and they're like trying to peck at him, and like no one's gonna hurt each other. They're just like figuring out boundaries. I mean they just got here. They just got here like exactly a week ago. So it's been a wild week and, you know, Mr. Bird has gotten blood work and we went to Manhattan and had an adventure. But yeah, this week has been action packed with the girls getting here and the developing dynamic between them as a unit and Paris. And obviously Mr. Bird is not involved whatsoever.
Sure. And how long are the girls sticking around for?
I mean, I have to find them a home.
Okay.
Like, I have to find them somewhere to go after this. I'm their third foster, and they're not really that personable. Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't been able to, like, pick them up or, like, have them on me or, you know, put my finger out for a perch for them. Like, they won't get near me. They're like birds from the outside. So I need someone who already has a flock of female parakeets and like isn't looking for, you know, sort of main characters. Like Mr. Bird and Paris are main characters, but I don't think people are gonna like really be able to hang out with the girls as much as like, you know, with friendlier guys like this. So I've been like asking the people at the vet to see if anybody has like a flock they're building of female parakeets. So
sure.
That's about that. They're, you know, they're going to stay until they're not here anymore.
Okay. I mean, whatever works. Yeah. I'm,
yeah.
I guess Paris will just have to deal.
Yeah, it's like he feels like they are his babies, just like he felt like Mr. Bird was his baby. But he's quickly realizing that the girls are much faster than him. And that makes him so angry. So it really is a developing sort of dynamic. And I'm just like sitting here and watching.
The biosphere experiment.
I know. I told my neighbor that it really does feel like I'm on some sort of island in here. I also, like, I don't know if people can hear me eating, but I will highlight the fact that sugar has gotten me through the pandemic.
Hell yeah.
And specifically living on the block that I live on. Now I have access to organic chocolate mousse cake whenever I want, 24/7. So that's what I'm eating right now. Like, I think I read some sort of tweet thread about like striking out on your own as an adult. And obviously, like, that's not my situation right now. But one of the pieces of advice was to find like a vice, to find some sort of like small stakes thing that could be your thing. And that's kind of what helps you like get day to day, week to week. And yeah, lox bagels and chocolate mousse cake from the nice bodega under my train stop. That's pretty much like how I've gotten from last episode to today. That's why I carry on, is I live near such gorgeous food.
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea. I think I was onto something similar. The closest grocery store to me is the Harris Teeter in our neighborhood, and they made a pretty good cranberry oatmeal cookie that I was really into getting whenever I went down there. I mean, now I come to find out they're a Kroger subsidiary, and I'm not crossing the picket line, but someday.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, MoviePass was such a phenomenon, and I've heard from people that MoviePass saved their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know so many people for whom going to movies is their vice,
yeah.
You know, is their adult city life vice. And, you know, obviously we're not talking about addictive substances. We're not talking about intoxicants, but we're talking about like something silly you spend a few dollars on that keeps you going.
Absolutely. And, you know, I, as someone who went back to the movies in the mask as soon as it seemed like it might be safe, I am sort of pulling back from that now. Sort of been forced to admit, but Rachel got me a Kindle for Christmas, and you know,
oh, awesome.
For a while I didn't think that the format was for me in terms of being able to read it like I would a regular book, but you know, I've expanded my comfort zone as far as that goes, and the fact that, you know, can even buying a Kindle book, it'll typically go for like $4 or $5 less than a physical book. That is like exactly the sort of thing where it doesn't feel like extravagant to just, you know, go for it if there's something I really want. So I think that's going to really work out for me.
Yeah, I wish I could go to the movies right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did discover a really good movie theater that I went to with my roommate, and then like kind of everything shut down.
Right.
And I was actually also, you know, me living in New York City, I was going to live theater.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I was like, it's totally like not the kind of like low stakes, cheap vice that we were just talking about, because like kind of you pay $40 to $70 to like maybe have a bad time. But I was going with friends who I am involved in writing projects with, and we were going to these things and we were studying them. And so we, my friend Emma and I, who are writing a horror movie together,
Oh, hell yeah.
we went to a couple plays, and I just had such an awful time. And we also made dinner and watched a movie that was really bad. And like each of these experiences, we turned to each other and we're like, okay, what did we learn? Like, what did they do wrong? What did we hate about it? Like, what would we do differently? And that made my entire fall
That's awesome.
bearable, definitely. Yeah. So should we transition into our questions?
Yeah, we can. We have, thank you to everybody who sent us questions, and particularly the ones who sent these two, both of which we got in our DMs for the official Twitter account. The first one is from a 24-year-old self-diagnosed non-binary person. Says, this year I've been experiencing the loss of one of the biggest loves of my life, who was also autistic. We had no external support and were each other's everything from when we were 17 to 21, so from the outside, we got labeled as extremely codependent and bad for each other. They go on to say that in relationships since, I've realized I've taken on a huge amount of pressure to be able to completely regulate and manage alone, but which I think is a sad thing to expect from anyone, but it's definitely unhealthy for me as an autistic person because the truth is I really need help and cannot do some things alone that autistics can. Now finding myself very confused about what the appropriate level of needing other people is, and I'm very afraid of getting it wrong. How do I ask for the consideration and consistency I need without asking for something unrealistic? And do you have any thoughts on how to develop a network of people that understand your autism and are more able to provide care during times of crisis without a high level of coordination and self-advocacy on my end?
I think my first thing that I'm going to say is very discouraging because, as autistic people, and especially as queer autistic people who are grieving people, if we try to seek care from the wrong person or the, people who aren't willing to give it, we run the risk of being punished. Either directly with a confrontation or through icing out, or everybody's very online, so the worst thing to see is a vague tweet that is about you, but the person is too cowardly to actually confront you with that. Like, that's, I'm sure this person, being so young and being queer, like they've had that experience. They're coming to us on Twitter. It seems like they have run up against punishment and spikes and, whoever in their life who told them and their deceased partner, that they were codependent. Like, clearly, whoever said they were codependent wasn't also like offering an alternative, wasn't also offering care to replace this. They were just sort of like, I don't know, maybe I'm projecting a lot, but it very much sounded like a policing without offering another solution. Wow, I wish that was a sunnier answer. But yeah, I just want to say that I know the kind of like house on fire sort of place this person is speaking from.
And I agree with that, but one thing that I do wanna offer as well is that I know that it's very easy to feel that as autistic people, like any like correction that a neurotypical person offers for how we are personing, they're inherently onto something. And I guess my response to that is don't just take for granted that someone is correctly assessing you as codependent, because, you know, sometimes like people are just being judgy. Like, I mean, it's you should always self-examine just in general, like in your human behavior. That's part of, like, I guess not being like completely letting any constructive criticism or whatever bounce off you. But also, you know, I get that you don't want to be codependent, but don't assume you're codependent just because some person who doesn't necessarily know what they're talking about assesses you that way. Like, I think that, you know, it's okay that you have needs, and I understand that this problem is deeper than just being okay with that, but I do think that there's this guilt attached to it that sometimes it's really hard to get through. Even if you like know that you're not doing anything wrong, it can be hard to drown out like the chorus of like ableist messages telling you that you are doing something wrong by having needs. And like, everybody is fucked up right now, first of all. And it's okay if you feel like you went in fucked up and are now deeper in the hole. Like, that's to be expected. This is that's not your fault. And to the extent that you're like not hurting somebody else, you are allowed to find ways to address that as we get through this.
Yeah. And I can't remember if I've said this before on the podcast, but I mean, this is just the thing that my best friend and I have to tell each other. Like, we have to remind each other that we are also people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the people that have conflict with us, or the people who are positioning themselves on a hierarchy above us, that's not correct.
Yeah.
Because we're all people. And, you know, certainly in my romantic relationships and in some roommate situations, I have felt like I have actually acted from a place of not being also a person with valid needs and with a need for safety and comfort and, you know, wellness and warmth and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah. So you're right that you shouldn't necessarily trust another person who is like, you know, making a judgment on you if you are autistic and they are not, because you're both people in this situation. And you, the most important thing is that your personhood matters as much as their personhood. I think that's what I was kind of dancing around, but my brain is sort of pandemic fog right now. But yeah, I think that's what I want to say, is that your personhood is as whole as another person's personhood.
Yeah, and don't doubt your understanding of your own needs, which can be a very easy thing to doubt, but you know, it's, you know, I think that we as autistic people are taught to mistrust our instincts more than we necessarily should.
Yeah. Yeah. And in terms of like practical stuff, you know, I'm just scrolling through the sort of uncondensed original version that they sent us. And I don't know if I'm going to advocate for like a total overhaul of this person's life, but I will say that if they are poor and alone and queer during this pandemic, I am hoping that they're living somewhere, where they can easily obtain state Medicaid and get free psychiatry, get free meds, get free grief counseling, get free, regular therapy. I think really, living in a city has saved me. And I'm sure you feel the same way as someone who, we both don't drive.
Yeah.
We both, tend to be isolated people, even though we know so many people and we have so many friends and we share a lot of the same friends. But, this is such bad advice. I shouldn't be giving advice, but this person, if you're listening, please move to a city and, get support and get state Medicaid. Because I think, you're so young and you're feeling kind of like it's the end, and we are all feeling like it's the
Yeah.
end, kind of all the time. But yeah, I really want you to like orient yourself right now around obtaining free therapy and obtaining like community mutual aid, and that's going to be easiest in cities where there are already a lot of younger queer people.
Sure. And I think that, like, going back years, this is I think that this has been sort of the go-to move going back decades for queer people,
Oh,
like
yeah.
especially those like who are maybe in a rural or less understanding or more insular community. And I think that it may seem like something that's easy for a person to say, like, simply move, but we definitely understand the challenges involved in something like that, but I think that this is a very it can be a very like high risk but also high reward situation.
Yeah, and even just like starting out the pandemic, living in Philly and living in a studio apartment and kind of being an adult in a city in that way, and then coming here to New York City, like that's been life-changing because I can go take a train and wander around Chinatown and not feel unsafe at all, and just, do my like vampire shit, just like do my wandering. And that wasn't possible in a smaller city. But in a larger city, you can find what you're seeking because people before you have sought it out and found it.
Yeah, so it's almost like anything, like 2 bags, $5, 1 me. Just getting off the. I'm sorry, I got a little more theater kid with it than I typically do. I generally suppress that a little as a public health measure.
Yeah.
But I think maybe we'll cut this. Maybe it's may, may, maybe the maybe the reaction I got was too funny to cut. We'll figure it out. This is someone that we have been in touch with in the show DMs before as well, but they recently followed up with us, and we figured that we should since we tend to take a little while between episodes, we figured that we should go ahead and take their question as well, since they just sent it yesterday, I think. This they say I think I'm starting to truly accept that I'm on the spectrum. I just feel like I'm grieving. I don't know how to explain it. On one hand, it's a great thing to feel like I found out the why, even though some days I doubt it. It just feels like this internal struggle to fit in, not just mask, but actually fit in, will be a factor for my entire life. And now I'm feeling like I'm acting more autistic now, so it's making me question if it's even autism, or if I'm just really bad at being a human and not on the spectrum at all. I feel like Ariel in Part of the World when she wonders what it'd be like on land. And So this is, I guess, a little less practical advice than that first one, but I think that this is, and I don't think this is an uncommon feeling at all. I think that, particularly when so many of us become familiar with the concept of autism through media before we necessarily come to realize it about ourselves.
So my immediate answer would be that it's like incredibly common for an undiagnosed autistic person to feel half human or to feel non-human or to feel like everybody has their own rules on this level above you, but you're kind of a robot and you kind of can't access their world, you know? You feel like a like an animal or a robot or a mermaid or some other cryptid, because you can't understand why some people are better in your perspective at being people. You know, they must have something that is so different from you, or that you must be so different from them that you are like a different species or come from a different world.
And it's also really easy once you understand your own neuroatypicality to feel like any kind of confusing human behavior is only confusing to you because you're autistic. And that's not necessarily true. Like a lot of human behavior is just weird, even if it's commonly accepted as normal. And you don't necess and you shouldn't like be kicking yourself for missing a step every time you find that confusing, because a lot of people are faking completely understanding it, and a lot of people have maybe come to accept it more than they should necessarily.
For some reason, we expect non-autistic people to like have the rule book, and we don't, but they also don't have the rule
No,
book because it doesn't exist.
absolutely. And the I don't want to make it seem like our experiences are universal, because they're not, and there are a lot of parts of being autistic that neurotypical people are not party to, and a lot of struggles thereof, but that they are trying to figure out how to be human as they go through life too. They just, there's just this default assumption that they have it figured out and you don't, when often it's often you're on the same footing, and often you're on better footing, whether you realize it or not.
Kind of as an autistic person, I have felt like I see things more honestly in terms of the fact that everybody is grifting and everything is a grift. Like, I feel like I am aware of the things I do that are coasting on other people having false confidence in me. And that's pretty much what every neurotypical person is doing, is they are faking it until they make it. But the autistic experience is like, on one side, you're like, how are they doing that? And then on the other side, you're like, oh, I'm a magician, you know? 'Cause like, either you haven't figured it out yet, or you have found a way to gamify, and that's how you get through. But yeah, neurotypical people don't know what they're doing, and they often do not know what they're about to say before it comes out of their mouth. And we should not be worshiping them as gods.
Yeah. I mean, that was actually one of the big things I realized. Like, if I spent so much time feeling like I was faking it, you know, eventually I came to think, well, so what if I am? Like, look how many people I'm fooling if I am. That's badass. I'm like a master criminal.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's a mistake that you and I are both interested in crime. And that is also the way we approach, like, being very talented and accomplished in our field.
Yeah.
You know, like, anyone else would look at our credits and look at our work and be like, oh, they're good at what they do. But then here we are, and we're like, oh, we're con men.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's, and I was also reminded of, you know, it's something that one of the more famous autistic people, Greta Thunberg, has said, is that, you know, that what she thinks that she is an effective activist because she's autistic, because she recognizes bullshit and PR speak and all that when she hears it, and feels like less acclimated to just nodding along like it means anything, like neurotypical people might be used to doing.
Yeah, and the common refrain in this person's submission is masking, the mask is slipping, mm-hmm. acting, and the answer is, you know, it's all fake.
Yeah.
Which may not be very comforting, but that's unfortunately the answer.
I've been through a similar thing, and I ended up sort of likening it to breathing. Like, if you think about the fact that you need to constantly breathe, you're going to have a bad time. You're going to get like really hung up on thinking about how you need to do that. But, you know, probably most of the time, you're not thinking about that at all. You're just on autopilot as far as that goes. And I think that everybody is faking it, but is letting instinct take over probably for most of the time. And, you know, eventually, you know, what's the difference if you're just, you know, faking it in that way that instinct takes over?
Apparently that's what happens with driving, but
oh, really?
I'll never find out because I'm too scared.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, uh-huh. But I talk to people who drive because obviously, you know, I get rides from friends, and mm-hmm. I, you know, in the passenger seat am freaking out because it's a machine and we're on the road with other machines. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I talk to my friends who are driving me and they're like, oh yeah, you forget about the life and death thing. And it's God. Just like, wow, autopilot. That's mm-hmm. not a play on words. It really is. You no longer think about it.
Yeah, no, stopped by my dad's a couple months ago, actually, and we ended up talking about how he had tried to teach me to drive, and because I couldn't get that autopilot thing through my head, he eventually just got really frustrated with me. And it was almost literally exactly like the Bob's Burgers, where Bob is teaching Tina to drive, and she's just like drifting towards the one other car in the parking lot, yeah. And Bob just keeps going, we still have like a lot of time to just turn in literally any direction, Tina, it's fine. But it's, yeah, that's, I mean, the driving thing is that's a great example. And it's, you know, it also gets back to our you know, our earlier point in terms of it's really good to live in a city with a transit network.
Yeah, that's another thing. If you're a young autistic person and you move to a big city, you get to ride the train.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You get to ride buses, you get to ride trains, you might even get to ride trolleys. So that's kind of a bonus.
Okay, so for our closing segment, which is something we typically do with our episodes with guests, but we're going to do it the two of us as well, is the setup this time is, what is the most pleasant surprise that you've recently encountered in terms of just something to pass the time, like something you watched, something you listened to, something you ate, something like that. And Charlie, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, so it's kind of not a straight pleasant surprise, because it's the fact that I discovered, just as we all kind of on Twitter are discovering as a community, as a looser queer community or people in the arts, et cetera, et cetera. We're all sharing the bad experience and the painful experience of being into Sex in the City. So obviously, like, the new show called And Just Like That just came out. And, you know, if you're non-binary like me, you know about the non-binary character and, like, how truly awful the writing is surrounding that one person and all of the other characters' interactions with that one person. But I have now gone back because I have access to HBO Max, and I am just, like, consuming an unholy amount of the, you know, the back catalog, the original series. And I'm so miserable, but it's so comforting. It's not like, you know, it's not like me enjoying the show Insecure, which is genuinely one of the best TV shows I've ever seen, and, like, so true and so real. Sex in the City and also And Just Like That think they are real, and that's what makes it so, like, absurdly uncanny valley. So all of us gay people online are just, like, having such a bad time. And it's making me feel, like, so comforted and so a part of a community. So yeah, I'm enjoying myself.
Hell yeah. So I don't know if I talk about this fairly often, but I don't know if I've talked about it on the podcast, before, but I'm, like, so uninformed about music. I'll just I'll discover, like, one new artist I like per fiscal quarter, maybe, or sometimes even just, like, one song I like per fiscal quarter. But I'm really into this artist, Yebba, Y-E-B-B-A, and her vibe is, like, kind of like a spooky Appalachian Adele. And
okay.
I really dig it. She's got this, this one song that I discovered her through is called Boomerang, and it's just, like, this archetypal sort of angry woman, you ought to know, goodbye girl type kiss-off song, which is the kind of thing that I obviously really go in for. And that's, you know, it's so... As I tend to do, I got, like, a couple songs that are the only thing I listen to for an extended period of time, and she's part of that, so it's an exclusive club. I hope she appreciates it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me open up my Spotify and see if I've even listened to anything new. Not really, honestly. I mean, I did discover some, like, really fucked up, like, post-punk / new wave / no wave that, like, came up on one of my shuffles. And I was, like, really into this one album I discovered for, like, I took a brief trip up to Rhode Island.
Yeah,
and
I remember
so this like, experimental 80s album was, like, both ways my like Amtrak soundtrack, and I was, like, very, very intensely playing it on repeat. And now that I'm home and in my normal life, I'm back to listening to the same albums I've been listening to for, you know, 8 years.
Sure. Yeah, I try to discover stuff through Spotify, but I really enjoyed the Steven Spielberg West Side Story remake, and I listened to the soundtrack to that a bunch, so now my algorithm is like hopelessly fucked up with show tunes, which I mean, I like them, but they aren't like putting new stuff out on a regular basis necessarily.
Yeah, well, that soundtrack, isn't it just like a redo of the old soundtrack?
Yeah.
It's not really new music? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if they did anything differently, but no, I guess it's mostly just like the script that's different.
Yeah, so I think we did it.
Mm-hmm.
So listeners, I'm going to encourage once again that you write in to stimforstim@gmail.com, which is STIM, the number 4, STIM. Finally, we're going to address your grooming, self-care, skincare, cooking, roommate, et cetera, submissions on our next episode, which we're really excited for. We finally got the perfect guest.
Mm-hmm.
So please write in all of your concerns and tips and tricks and burning questions. stimforstim@gmail.com or find us on Twitter @stimforstim.
Yep. Hope to see you soon, and hoping that by the time you listen to this, things are looking up, however slightly. We'll see you next time.